This is Mayo Clinic Radio, the only show that gives you the chance to ask your questions to Mayo Clinic experts. We'll take you beyond the headlines to explain what developments in medicine mean to you. Join the conversation by phone, Twitter, Facebook, or radio.mayoclinic.org. Now, with this week's program, here are your hosts, Dr. Tom Shives and Tracy McRae.
From the Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota campus, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McRae.
Welcome, everyone, to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Hello, Tracy. Nice to see you, as usual.
Yes, good to be here.
Interesting program today.
Yes.
I think we're all going to learn something about not only about COPD, but about new ways to treat it when we meet our guest. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, also known as COPD. It's interesting that it affects so many people in the United States. It's estimated some 15 million people, and those are just the ones that we know about. There are probably a lot of people who have COPD that just haven't been diagnosed. And it is among the top five causes of death in the United States. Serious problem. People who have COPD, unfortunately, have difficulty breathing, and that's a problem.
Did you say 15 million people?
15 million.
Wow.
And it's estimated that there are probably
that many
who have COPD who haven't been diagnosed.
Well, today on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll talk with a COPD expert, Dr. Roberto Benzo. We're going to talk about exactly what is COPD and what the symptoms of it are, what causes it, how they make the diagnosis. And then, the gist of the program, we're going to talk about some treatment, including how they used to be treating COPD.
Conventional,
yes,
traditional.
Right. And now a new technique that encourages patients to improve their own health through, I would call the buzzword of the last year or two, mindfulness meditation. The results are pretty impressive.
And a little later in the hour, we'll talk to one of Dr. Benzo's patients who's using mindfulness to help control her COPD. Looking forward to that. But first, you know, this week there was a groundbreaking move for people who like to track their health on their smartphone. Apple and the Mayo Clinic announced that they're working together on a new medical information platform called HealthKit. Apple plans to use the new operating system in its new iPhones and its new iPads. Joining us in studio is the Medical Director for Marketing and Public Affairs at Mayo Rochester. He's also a radiologist, Dr. John Wald. Dr. Wald, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be here.
So you were there in San Francisco when this announcement was made. Pretty exciting.
It was very exciting. It was really the culmination of a lot of great work between the Apple organization and Mayo Clinic to bring these two entities together, the Mayo Clinic app and HealthKit.
And how will this work? What is the HealthKit?
So the HealthKit is really a central repository for all data points related to health and wellness. I like to think of it as Fitbit on steroids, being able to put all those weight, exercise points of data into one central repository. But more importantly, in the future, being able to take medical data such as your glucose level or your oxygen level or your pulse, put that into HealthKit, and then connect it through the Mayo Clinic app into the electronic medical record, allowing providers to then connect with patients in their home or their local environments to really start to make decisions about their health and their wellness in their own homes.
This would be beneficial then for people with, as you said, like diabetes or COPD, something that's a chronic condition that has to be managed. This would be quite useful for them.
Absolutely. And each case is unique. So the provider and the patient can decide what they pull out of HealthKit through the Mayo Clinic app and then into the electronic medical record for decision making. And the great part for Mayo Clinic is we get to connect with patients through our already standard Mayo Clinic app. But we'll also start reaching out to consumers through a different arm, and we'll move from the Mayo Clinic patient app to the Mayo Clinic app, offering consumers of health information and guidance relative to their conditions of importance to them.
How do you get the information? I mean, what's the connection between the body and the app?
Well, that's a great question. So right now, there are different types of devices that we all wear on our wrists. There's a lot of speculation out there that Apple ultimately will create a device which will allow them to access your own information. Could be your heart rate, could be how much oxygen's in your blood, how much sugar's in your blood. Embed that into the HealthKit repository. We then could use the Mayo Clinic app to pull that information into the patient record and make decisions about patients throughout the world.
And that would come just from a bracelet or a band on the wrist?
I think we're at the precipice.
Wow.
I'm bored with that. But imagine where we're going.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it used to be, and I think it still is, that if you're going to take your blood sugar, you have to prick your finger. Do you think there's potential that some a wristwatch-like device will be able to check your glucose?
Absolutely.
Unbelievable.
Well, we started this conversation with Dr. Shives saying, you know, people that track their health on a smartphone, and just that is kind of awe-inspiring, but it's becoming the norm. It actually is something that people can do now.
I think it is something that people can do now. We talk a lot about this in the wellness space, but when we move into the health space, how do I monitor if my condition, if I'm an asthmatic or if I'm a COPD patient? Those things become critically important because nobody wants to go to the emergency room. Nobody wants to be admitted to the hospital. And so if we can intervene sooner in their care and prevent those conditions, it's beneficial to the patients. It's beneficial to healthcare in general because we can actually reduce the cost of healthcare by preventing those hospital admissions and ER visits.
You know, you sound a little bit hoarse. Was there a lot of yelling at this event?
Well, Tom, any chance there is to rewrite code at an event for a developer, we're all up at cheering and screaming.
Well, you must have been. Dr. John Wald, thanks so much for dropping by the station. It's nice to have you here, and best of luck. And this is obviously an exciting time for you and for Mayo and Apple.
It is an exciting time for all of us, and thanks for giving us the opportunity. And continue the great work you're doing, Tracy, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity this morning.
All right.
Thank you.
You bet. You can head off to your soccer game now.
Yeah.
Good. All right, time for a short break. Coming up, we'll talk with COPD and mindfulness expert Dr. Robert Benzo. Plus, myth or matter of fact, only smokers get COPD.
Unusual in the fact that a lot of our listeners are all in sync on the answer to this one. So we'll see if we're right. Is that a myth or a fact?
Easier than we thought.
That's right. Right after the bottom of the hour, we'll take your questions for our guest at 507-282-1234. You can contact us at our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or on Twitter at #MayoClinicRadio. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic Radio. Dr. Tom Shives, Tracy McRae, and this week's guest and pulmonologist, a lung specialist, Dr. Roberto Benzo. Dr. Benzo, thanks so much for being here. Good to have you.
Thank you very much for having me here.
You have a little bit of an accent. Not from Iowa.
No, I'm not. I am originally from Argentina. Been here for a long time, but born in Argentina.
And when did you come to the United States?
1993.
And then did you take all of your medical training here or some of it in Argentina?
No, well, actually, before coming here, I had some my residency there, but then I repeat my residency here. I did all my training here.
I love to find out why people get to where they're at. What interests you in COPD? Is that where you started, is in breathing issues?
Well, yes, I started in breathing issues because I was born with asthma, and then I saw my sister suffering a lot with asthma. That was kind of it from the very beginning of my life. I knew that I wanted to do something with breathing, and that's why I decided to be a pulmonologist.
No kidding. Now, it's also interesting that you have obviously overcome this problem of asthma because aren't you a triathlete and don't you run marathons?
Yes, I do.
An Ironman? Are you an Ironman?
I am an Ironman, yes.
He looks like an Ironman.
You bet I am.
All right, COPD. Tell us about that disease. It truly affects, 5% of the population or so, and maybe more that if we knew everybody who out there who's having difficulty breathing who has COPD. What's the problem in the lung?
COPD is a disease of exposure. Most of the time, 90%+ is exposure to cigarette smoking. But in other places of the globe, is exposure to biomass fuel or just cooking with wood. So COPD is an exposure to a fume or a toxic that create inflammation in the lung flesh, that is emphysema, or in the lungs pipe. That's the chronic bronchitis, which are the two main entities that comprise the COPD most of the time.
It's a myth that only smokers get COPD. Other people who are exposed to some sort of toxins in the environment can also get this disease. Does anybody ever get it just spontaneously without having smoked and without having been exposed to something toxic?
Yes, there is a condition that is genetic called alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency that can produce COPD. And this is something that you get it not because of smoking. However, smoking make it worse. And And it's something that is very well taken care of in the country now. Fortunately, there are good foundations that are working on that.
And that's one of the, I was reading, one of the genetic research areas that you are studying is how mindfulness, which is where we're going to get to, can help the people who have the genetic component for COPD.
I think that we are trying to see how mindfulness affects our behavior mm-hmm. and affects our symptoms. And our symptoms are impacted by a variety of things. It's not just the ailment in the physical body. It's that how much active we are, how much awareness of the body movement. Emotions play a tremendous role in symptoms.
So the people have COPD. What is, till recently, what is the typical treatment for this chronic condition?
The typical treatment is giving the patient bronchodilators, means that drugs that expand the size of the tubes for which we breathe. And we use also anti-inflammatory medications like steroids in the way of inhaled steroids to prevent further flare-ups, but also we use now antibiotics that are used as anti-inflammatory medications. So it's a combination of anti-inflammatory entities plus bronchodilators. I would just say that the main, you know, treatments has been over the years the use of bronchodilators, and I think that the picture is just changing a bit. In the horizon of treatment of COPD, just because we are adding not only pharmacologic components, but also surgical components, and also the what I work on, behavioral components of COPD.
So you're really trying to control the disease. There's no way to cure this problem once you have it, correct?
The answer would be yes, we cannot cure it. But it's very, very clear that not everybody progress in COPD. That it used to be called a progressive disease of the lung. Ah. And so now we have very strong data that people can maintain their degree of ailment without deterioration. And that's why what we actually do with our own body, with our own mind, and how we actually live our life can have a tremendous impact on how we progress. So it's the whole concept of epigenetics, like so how our gene expressed, not what actually we come with the makeup, but how expressed, and how expressed depend on in the environment they have. And one of the biggest environment we have is our mind.
So 90% of the people who have this disease, COPD, are smokers. I assume that once they are diagnosed, they're former smokers? Or do you have, are some people just have so much difficulty quitting smoking, and I'm sure that impedes your ability to help them.
I think that I don't think it impedes my ability to help them, because the reason we smoke, the reason we eat, the reason we drink, it's kind of sometimes beyond of the immediate control thing. Is that it's the idea of knowing what actually is going into me and what I decide to do. So many people, they have a tough time to quit. Mm-hmm. But eventually, they come around. There's nothing like suffering and just having symptoms to actually make us say, oh, I need to do something different.
Now, you mentioned surgical options. In my head, when I heard that, I just imagined a transplant. Is there other surgical options besides a lung transplant?
Yeah. So for a very small niche of the population of COPD that they have, usually their emphysema, which is the flesh affection of smoking in the upper part of the lung, we do a surgery in which we remove that part that is not very useful for their breathing, and that create that the remaining part of the lung to actually expand, and people feel better.
You're kidding.
No.
So you cut away the part that's not working, and the good part of the lung will expand, not grow, I suppose, but expand to fill some of that space.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's called the volume reduction surgery?
Yeah, volume reduction surgery. I mean, now we are doing that not only by surgery, but there are new techniques that we're doing here at Mayo Clinic that are, it could be as effective. I mean, we're kind of growing into the knowledge of that. But yes, there are it's called bronchoscopic lung reduction, so we don't need the surgery. We just go inside and put coils or, you know, devices that create the same effect of shrinking those areas of the lung that don't work well and allow the other areas of the lung to actually expand.
All right, so the mainstay of treatment is drug therapy, medication, but you've also got as a backup surgical intervention, which would include volume reduction, which you just talked about. How about lung transplants? Do you ever do lung transplants for COPD?
Yeah, we do. I mean, and but again, it's a very, very small piece of the pie that we're talking about.
And why is that? I mean, it would seem the obvious thing to do.
Well, yeah, it's the obvious thing to do because we usually think that we need to fix everything. And we need to actually get something new and put it in. I mean, and just keep our life, and that life is going to be just fine that way. And that doesn't really work that way. Just because of the concept of health. Health doesn't mean that everything is just fine. It means balance. The WHO, the World Health Organization, said that health is just not everything working fine. It's the balance between the emotions, between the physical, between the social.
So when it comes to the chronic conditions or something like, you know, we mentioned diabetes or this case COPD, it comes to managing that symptom and learning to work with that symptom. And you have said this is the purpose of today's show is really to talk about the mindfulness aspect of how a patient can, is it strong enough to say control their COPD with mindfulness?
Live with.
Okay.
Yeah. It's,
cause I know words
matter.
How does
that work?
Yeah. How does that work?
I would just say first that, mindfulness is the special awareness that we have on the attention that we pay into the present moment without saying to the present moment that we like it or dislike it. It's that quality of awareness that we have in our own attention. So it's paying really full, heartful attention to what is actually here and now. And this here is the thing, no matter what is here and now. And that is not, it's a simple thing, but it's not easy. But it's actually being with the good, being in front of a sunset and say, oh, wow, I like it. And being completely here, we are saying, oh, but it would be better if I have a Corona to drink at the same time. No. It's just to actually completely embrace the moment. And then the thing is also be able to embrace the other thing, the other part of life that is not perhaps what we like. And then just be completely there too. So that how encroach into the how mindfulness works in chronic disease.
Well, let's find out how well it works.
Yeah, we have Dr. Benzo has invited one of his patients to join us, and Ellen is on the line. Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
All right, well, now tell us how you got to know Dr. Benzo. What is your story?
Well, I was referred to Mayo Clinic about 4 years ago, and I'm his patient. And as we were talking about my condition, he recommended his mindfulness sessions that were coming up. And I think that was an 8-week series. And I came to each one of those. And then afterward, he mentioned that he was going to have a monthly class or group to get together and discuss how things are going. And that's how I got started 4 years ago.
What are your symptoms, Ellen? What you have COPD?
I have bronchiectasis.
Okay. Okay.
So that's inflammation of the tubes, the bronchial tubes that carry air down to the to the lungs.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's how I got started in the group. And each month we discuss different ways to continue practicing the mindfulness.
Can you give us an example of one of the first ones that you did or one that kind of sticks with you that works the best? What do you do to help with mindfulness?
I think one of the things that I use most frequently is in the morning, I start the mindfulness breathing before I even get up in the morning. And then there's other times in the day, of course, that I use it with the movements that are yoga-type movements. I also use it in stressful situations where I realize the stress that I'm putting on myself and try and back away from that stress and then just do there's a 3-minute breathing technique that I use most often.
Is it slow down your breathing or what do you do?
Well, it makes you not think about what is actually going on you put aside what's going on in your life, in your body, and concentrate on the breathing. It relaxes your body, it relaxes your mind so that you aren't, as Dr. Benzo has said, multitasking, even in your brain. You're not thinking about, oh gosh, I've got this other problem, but right now I'm going to put it aside.
And are you getting better at it? I know that it's a skill that you have to practice.
It is. It is something that each time that I am at the class, I learn something new, or it's an encouragement to me to keep practicing.
So you think, I presume that you're on some medication in it also.
Of course. Uh-huh.
But how much has this helped you? How much better are you because of this mindfulness?
Oh, I can't even calculate how much better I am. I can't believe that I was able to continue my life all these years without it. And I've told Dr. Benzo that he was the first doctor in all my years, and I'm in my 70s, who actually inquired about my breathing. Huh. And so it was totally new to me to concentrate on that, getting breath into my lungs, getting relaxation in my mind and in the stressful areas of my life. And I can't imagine how my life would not have progressed to what it is right today if I had not been part of this group.
So you are a believer in mindfulness.
Oh, yes.
Hey, Ellen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad you called.
Thank you.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio, our guest and expert on COPD and mindfulness, Dr. Roberto Benzo.
Coming up, this week's health and medical news with Vivian Williams, and right after that, we'll take your phone calls at 507-282-1234. You leave comments on our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, and your tweets, too, at hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio. This is Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Hi, I'm Vivian Williams with headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. Obstructive sleep apnea, or OSA, and diabetes. Both are all too common, and new research shows they're linked. Researchers from the University of Toronto say their large study of more than 8,000 people showed that among patients with OSA, the initial severity of the disease predicted the subsequent risk for diabetes. They say the effects of less oxygen, shorter sleep time, and higher heart rate were associated with diabetes, and this new info may allow for early preventive measures in these patients. These findings were published in the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine. And a new Mayo Clinic study in the journal Pediatrics reviews the types and severity of injuries among youth ice hockey players. The study examined the spectrum of injuries and found fractures and concussions to be most frequent, with many of these injuries requiring hospitalization and surgery. Now, most injuries occurred in boys and older children, though approximately 20% happened in girls, which is higher than previously reported. Surgeon Dr. Michael Ishitani has advice for coaches to help keep players safe.
Coach defensively, coach smart. Realize that 99.99% of the kids you're going to coach are not going to make a living playing this, and that you're there to try to help them develop as young men and young women to become better people, and not necessarily to train the next Wayne Gretzky.
And here's some news about measles. It seems you don't hear much about that disease these days, but almost 300 cases were reported to the CDC this year. The CDC says nearly all cases have been associated with international travel by unvaccinated people, and they say these cases show the importance of vaccination, especially before international travel. Now, symptoms include fever, rash, plus cough, runny nose, or pink eye.
Now, where does it hurt? That's a familiar question your doctor asks when you're in pain. Well, a new study from the University College of London found for the first time how our ability to figure out where things hurt varies depending where on the body the pain is. Now, we're most sensitive at the forehead and on the fingertips, and they call it spatial acuity. They use lasers to cause pain on people in the study, and then they mapped out how it's distributed across the body. They say this info has important implications for assessing acute and chronic pain, which affects millions each year. And that's a look at headlines from the Mayo Clinic News Network. I'm Vivian Williams. You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network.
Welcome back. Information you want from specialists who know. This is Mayo Clinic Radio, on air, online, and on iHeartRadio. By the way, if you want to listen live, there are two ways to do that. You can go to our website and listen live through the website, or you can go to krocam.com, hit the menu button, and listen live through KROC. Time for you to join our program. Anything you'd like to ask about the lung, in particular chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, our guest is an expert, Dr. Roberto Benzo. You can also contact us through our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, or you can always tweet us, hashtag Mayo Clinic Radio.
And we're talking about mindfulness and how it comes to help treating COPD, people with COPD. And of course, you don't have to make too much of a stretch to go anybody who has a chronic condition that they're trying to manage, or even a temporary condition like a cancer patient. Anything, any care that needs to be managed, mindfulness could end up helping them. And why? Why is that?
I think that the clarity of our mind, the way we embrace every situation, any chronic disease, I mean, it can be improved by paying attention. It's like they usually tell my patients and my own self, it's like putting muddy water and you let it stand. And what happened in a few seconds, the water become more clear. You see more clear. If health is balanced, and to achieve that balance, in addition of course, fixing the physical ailment, the healing, the balance come from actually how my body is with this, how is my emotion, what is what I think about my emotions. Sometimes we are all sad at some point, but sometimes we are saying, I'm the sad person, I'm the anxious person, I'm the angry person. And that is actually, it's a nagging to ourselves that doesn't help in any way to achieve that balance.
I can see if you're stressed out, you've got cancer or you've got diabetes and you're supposed to be losing weight and you're supposed to be exercising more, all these different stress things. But it's interesting to me and a little curious of how you're using mindfulness and meditation, which is, as Ellen said, our patient before the break, breathing centered on people who have breathing difficulties. So in my head, that would make you more stressed. How does it make these patients less stressed to focus on their breathing?
Well, breathing in and breathing out perhaps is the essence of mindfulness. It's like something so primitive and repetitive that by doing that and paying attention into it, give us the silence of the mind. The silence of the mind, it's not about not having anything or putting our mind in blank. It's about non-reacting to it. So there's a very recent, very large research body of literature in which it said that it's not bad to be very stressed. The idea is how we respond to it. I mean, is that, and in this particular study, I mean, people that were in high stress, they didn't die more. The people that died more was the one that were high stress, but also they feel, this is really affecting me. So it's not letting that get to you, kind of consume your whole body. Some people say, I'm the cancer patient. You're not. Your cancer is just one thing in you, but you are a much bigger thing than that. You're much bigger than COPD. You're much bigger than diabetes or heart failure. So it's finding yourself and being able to achieve, again, this balance. So mindfulness is, again, this attention to what is actually happening and being here. I mean, really present, really embracing life, reclaiming life. How many patients I did actually meet myself that in the deathbed or in the last few days or in the last few months, they say, you know what? Now that I was able to stop everything because I'm really dying, I recognize my family, I recognize my friend, everything that I never really pay attention to. why we don't pay attention right now? Why don't we just stop the ball right now and start paying attention? Being here means no minute anymore. Kind of embrace this life that is here, no matter what is here, why, what is here. So that's why the mindfulness is that quality of attention, no matter what is here, without saying it's good or bad. Away from liking and disliking.
Great, great thoughts and great insight. And, but everybody is always talking about outcomes. How do you know, with regard to your COPD patient population, that mindfulness is actually working?
Well, the number one thing is that when I ask the patient, how are you doing? And when patients ask answer like my patient, I'm just doing better, I'm breathing better, I'm functioning better, that is the number one outcome that we need to look at. Mm. Of course, then we'll go for how many times you end up in the hospital, how many times you end up in, you know, in the ER. And the other thing is that the embracing of all these other things that we use in treatment, rehabilitation in COPD, that is very important, and the medication itself, kind of embracing that. If you're really here, if you're really paying attention, you will be able to kind of be much more in the here and the now, and not so much in the narrative way of your mind. You know, our brain function with this narrative circuitry that is, we're always there, always thinking, always of how it should be in a ruler we hit ourselves with all the time. I mean, instead of having this way of exploration, what is actually here? And then when you're really here, when you hug somebody, when you eat, you eat, when you walk, you walk. It's just being here. I mean, the same happened with athletes. I mean, I'm just cycling. I'm just moving my arms. I'm just feeling my fingers going in the water. This is the way, I mean, these competitive athletes need that. They need that to actually be in their peak performance.
There is a Proceedings article that actually I have linked on our webpage at radio.mayoclinic.org. So if you'd like to read more about what we're talking about, you can go there. I saw a little statistic that said 70% of the cost of COPD for those patients is related to hospitalizations. And you have said that through mindfulness, you can reduce the hospitalizations, and then that thus reduces the cost. Has that, the outcome that Dr. Shives was talking about, has that been the case, that people are reducing their hospital visits?
Well, we are right now in the stream of using mindfulness and rehabilitation into this very outcome of hospitalization, which is 70% of the cost of COPD. So the federal government, the NIH, funded my laboratory to kind of work in this kind of way of rehabilitation that involve kind of a special way of talking, this mindfulness of the communication, mm-hmm. kind of really being here, talking to people, shutting up our voices and really listen. So this has to do with this idea of embracing people, really trust. And what we're talking about, what everybody's talking about in healthcare, being, having a collaboration, how do you get it? By actually embracing people. So we're doing kind of this research is oriented at using mindful rehabilitation at home and the mindful communication with patients to be able to kind of embrace them into go what they need to do to not end up in the hospital.
All right. Question about COPD, question or comment about mindfulness. Our guest is an expert, Dr. Roberto Benzo. What you have shown, though, is that not only does mindfulness reduce the number of hospitalizations, it reduces the length of the hospital stay, right?
Well, I think that we don't have there the unquestionable evidence for that. I mean, the thing is that what we have so far is this working that we're doing, and you heard the patient. And this is kind of a constant comment that again and again we're seeing on people that are having rehabilitation in this particular way.
What's the future hold? Where are you going next, and what projects are you working on?
So the future is that we are starting to open more the scope of treatment in patients with COPD. It's not just taking the inhaler. It's just about embracing life in a particular way. So it's kind of the way they move every day, the way they deal with their emotions. I mean, it's a particular part of our treatment that we don't really pay attention to. We think that everything needs to be fixed or put a new device or put a new organ. Of course, we do that at Mayo Clinic. Of course, we fix everything we can. But the idea is that we heal all the time. And that we heal by actually making people be embracing their life, coming to their senses, coming to life as it is. And this is something that is really go beyond poetry. It's real here. It's kind of not looking for something else, kind of being really here.
It's interesting because the Mayo brothers, always would say the needs of the patient are what comes first. And yet Ellen said you were the first doctor that ever asked her, how is your breathing? So it really is kind of a shift in how physicians are looking at not just, are we going to cure the patient or we have to manage the patient? It's we have to help the patient to live better. Is that fair to say? Is that a good way to say it?
Yeah, I'm a rehabilitation doctor, and the word rehabilitation means embody your own body right now as it is. It's rehabit your body. That means that we need to be really here to actually go to the next step. So the thing is, that's what I mean. It's not that I said, well, you need to do this technique of breathing to actually be better. It's like, let's breathe with this. Let's actually practice. Because a lot of this is like an athlete, and you need to train, rain or shine. You got to go to train. And so it's kind of this constant practice of trying to be present. I mean, and we use, you know, breathing, walking with awareness, different techniques that will be, that are really key to make us be here. It's not always fun, and it's not really easy, but it's simple.
507-282-1234. Helen is calling, and she has a question about diabetes, but yet a chronic condition. Go right ahead, Helen. What is your question?
I was wondering if there are any studies that show that the meditation improves diabetes control, blood sugar control, or cancer control, or is it more for coping with a chronic illness?
Oh, Helen, great question. Thank you.
So I think that there is a body of evidence that is showing that, you know, not directly a cure cancer thing, that, or, but I think that diabetes control is particularly appropriate because, you know, diabetes is affected by exercise, the level of sugar is affected by stress level, by emotion. So there are things that definitely will actually affect diabetes. And the other thing is that, as you well know, in patients with diabetes, lifestyle is everything. And that we believe that sometimes lifestyle is a to-do list. Our lifestyle is what we do. When we do mindfulness, right, we embrace who we are and what we're doing at every moment. And there is a very clear evidence now that when we do this kind of meditation, we are able to be much more present, much more keen on what actually is the best for us. That is decided by everyone.
The way we think can have a significant effect on our physical condition. Myth or matter of fact?
I think that I would say yes, it's a fact. I mean, the way I would just probably kind of expand a little bit of a think, because it's not just the mind. The way we are being, the way we are present, it definitely affects our body condition. Yes.
I had also just highlighted a quote from that proceedings article that said patient inactivity is one of the most important predictors of mortality in COPD. That was a research done 4 years ago. So if you can help COPD patients to control their symptoms, they're more likely to be active. I guess you could put that with diabetes or any of the heart disease. Then you can see how this mindfulness would help an upward spiral instead of a downward one.
It's a thing that affects every corner of your being. I mean, it's like there are a lot of very simple practices, like the practice of smiling, not laughing, just smiling, that is particularly powerful. Smiling not only decrease stress, meaning increase cortisol levels, I mean, increase endorphins, but also 300 muscles of the face that are actually imputing our brain and say, yes, I want to be here. So that's why, so it's not laughing, it's just smiling. It's just this power of being. So as far as COPD, there are two things that decrease the progression of COPD. One is quitting smoking, but the other is being physically active. And being physically active is easy to be said than done. So how do we embrace that? So I think, and we're talking about all these devices that tell us about how many steps we do, but the idea is that how do we go for this knowing to the actual doing? That's what mindfulness does. I mean, I think it's the keychain, it's the hook in between the knowledge that is available and bombarding us now 24/7 to the actually how I want to put me this in my life.
So if somebody says, wipe that smile off your face, ignore them.
I would just say, if you don't know what to do, smile.
Mindfulness can give elite athletes a competitive edge, myth or matter of fact.
I think it's true.
And do you, because you are, as we said, you're an Ironman, you run all these ultra marathons, all these different things. Do you? How do you use mindfulness for your training?
Well, the when you do training for an Ironman, and it's like it's a lot of many hours on the bike and many hours right running, there is a boring that comes with it, so when you start to shift into the music of your body moving, there is a lot of things that you learn about yourself. You learn about, working and going forward with pain and discomfort, and that is a tremendous asset for life. But so the thing is that how I use it for training, I just put my attention in my hands and my fingers when I actually swim, and in my hips when I actually bike, and on my feet when I actually run, and then. The hours goes by. I deal with the boring, and I deal with the pain, and I deal. It means I'm a companion with that. So pain is now my companion. I don't push that away, and that is such a thing that I try to transpire to my patient. Show another breath. Okay, bring it in. What it is? Let's breathe with that.
Because if you fight it, it creates the stress and it makes it harder.
If you fight it, it comes back to you.
Yeah.
Silence of the mind is not having anything in the mind. It's not reacting to it. It's just say, one of my teachers said, you have anger, it's kind of open the door, say, hello, my little anger. I will be with you. It's part of you. And the thing is, how do we actually kind of keep it down? It's just saying, you're there, but I decided to do this. So I'm angry, but I decided to breathe. I'm tired, but I decided to be on my feet. That's kind of the drill that I use in my training.
So I guess the question is, it's intensely interesting what you're doing, but how hard is it to learn? And if somebody wanted to use mindfulness for whatever reason, how do they go about learning this technique?
Well, I think it's more than a technique. It's a quality of awareness, and that you do it by doing very simple thing, like just doing you and me 10 breaths right now, and then stop everything, and just even when say, we cannot stop in the radio, all those things that will right. come to you. If I actually let's go for a 10 breath, we just do 10 breaths, and then you know what? You do 10 breaths now, and then the next time if something come up, you do the 10 breaths again. So, we have that in the website of the Healthy Mayo Clinic Healthy Living Center. In Abraham, people can download this 10 breath practice, and they can practice that. So you start simple. In any behavior change, you need two things: the right environment, meaning that you're the right place and the right time, or the right mind, and then a very small way to go forward. Start simple, start easy with a very small step.
And is this something, does it take a classroom environment to learn this, or could you start to learn it on the internet, or how would you go? Is there a book?
Well, there is. You can read books, and in which there are ways to do it. You can actually look on YouTube's way to do mindfulness meditation, or you can actually come to our classes. Or come to the meditation every Wednesday. We do meditation for anyone at the Center for the Spirit in Mayo Clinic. So.
Dr. Roberto Benzo, thanks so much for being here. I'm starting to feel better already, aren't you, Tracy?
Absolutely.
You're listening to Mayo Clinic Radio. Thanks, Dr. Benzo. On the Mayo Clinic News Network, coming up, we'll tell you about next week's program. Stay with us. Welcome back. Next week on Mayo Clinic Radio, we'll talk to an expert on cardiac arrest, Dr. Roger White, and he has been around for a long time. He's probably experienced and been in on more cardiac arrests than anybody that I know of.
I hope that next week is the only time I ever meet him. I don't want to have a cardiac arrest to meet Dr. White.
Well, sudden cardiac arrest. That's the topic. The heart stops, and it's an electrical problem. It's not like a heart attack where you have a blood vessel problem. This is an electrical problem, and it is a leading cause of death among adults over the age of 40. It happens 1,000 times a day in the United States, and here's the bad news. 9 out of 10 people who have cardiac arrests die. So here's the good thing.
The circuit board has got a haywire. Okay,
exactly.
Got a wire loose.
They don't all have to die. And if you and I are there and we know CPR, and if there's an AED, an automatic external defibrillator, a heart shocker close by, then the rate of survival goes way up. So, where can you learn CPR? How do you use an AED? We'll tell you next week on Mayo Clinic Radio.
We hope you'll join us. For more information on topics discussed on this program, visit our website, radio.mayoclinic.org, for a podcast of today's program and that proceedings article. Or go to mayoclinic.org, where over 3,000 physicians, scientists, and researchers from Mayo Clinic share their expertise to empower you to manage your health.
You've been listening to Mayo Clinic Radio on the Mayo Clinic News Network. Our senior producer, Ron Petrovich, our associate producer and phone screener, Audrey Castletine, our technical director, Mr. Kim David. Our theme music was written and performed by Chip Davis of Mannheim Steamroller. For Mayo Clinic Radio and Dr. Roberto Benzo and Mindfulness Meditation, I'm Dr. Tom Shives.
And I'm Tracy McCrae.
Thanks for being with us.
Any medical information conveyed during this program is not intended as a substitute for personal medical advice, and you should not take any action before consulting a healthcare professional. For more information, please go to our website, radio.mayoclinic.org. Please join us each week on this station for more of the medical information you want from Mayo Clinic specialists who know.